Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Welcome, everyone, to your freshly delivered hour post for the week. I am just one of your hosts here on the show, Matthew Rushing, and I am very, very excited to be here, as I usually am. I don't think that's changed much. And with me, something else that has not changed, the wonderful and brilliant, fantastic, lovely Drea Kaufman.
Hello! Who's also excited to be here with you guys every week, so woo!
Yay! Excitement! Hey, you know what is also really exciting, Drea?
We have two new reviews.
I know! How did you know what I was going to say?
We're just there. That's where we're at.
Yeah, totally copacetic. But we have a great new review by Bright Cannon. They say, love it! 5 stars. And they say that this is the first Harry Potter podcast they found that they feel like it's for adults.
I loved
that. So thank you.
I loved that.
Apparently, they also appreciate the fact that we're clean without cursing so they can listen with their family. So keep it clean, Drea.
I do my best. And when I read that part, I was like, I try. I'll try a little harder now for you.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, if it ever gets above, you know, the PG level, it gets bleeped for people.
It does get,
you know, so
it
you can
does.
Still, you can still listen for it with your kids. But another great review by Jacqueline. She says, love Harry! 5 stars. And we love Harry too, which is strange. So
she said more than that.
She said that she grew up not being allowed to read Harry Potter. But then she got married and moved on, and now she fell in love with the story. And so she's really enjoying our podcast, and breaking everything down just makes her day. So don't stop what you're doing because it's awesome.
I know, that one gave me the feels.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We won't stop doing what we're doing because it is awesome. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate these reviews. They mean so much to us. Thank you so much. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, where all these reviews were found, it's a great place to help us out. Hit subscribe, give us a review and a rating, because it really does help other people find the show when they're searching in Apple Podcasts, looking for, you know, you're just on iTunes like, podcast, what should I search for? Harry Potter. Well, this helps us come up first. So just give us some more ratings and reviews and help that happen. We're on every podcatcher you can imagine, though, so just search for us. You'll find us, Owl Post. We're also on Twitter, at Join Nerd Party, and we're on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. And if you maybe want to send us an email, just go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose Owl Post, and that will send the email to Drea and I, and then we can talk to you that way. So,
yay!
Well, Drea, we have a kind of an ominous chapter name this week as we're into chapter 7 already.
I know, Chamber I couldn't believe
Secrets.
It.
It's crazy talk. Mudbloods and Murmurs.
It's a pretty creepy Ooh. Title.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me, you remember in the Good Vibration song by the Beach Boys at the very end where it's like, woo-woo! Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds like a little, you know, ghost at the end. That's kind of what I feel like it should happen after you say this chapter's name.
I think that's fair.
Bloods and Murmurs. Ooh.
I think that's very fair.
Yeah. Everybody's like, stop doing that. Jeez.
Like, you're giving me the feels.
The creepy feels, which is, I mean, I would totally be doing that to stop it to Oliver Wood if he woke me up on a Saturday morning super early to practice Quidditch when I didn't even know it was coming.
Especially like your first week there and he had a tough week. I would not be as kind as Harry was.
Yeah, his week seems to just continue to get worse and worse.
Yes. They really
did. And I feel bad for him. You know, I mean, part of it they did doing themselves, right?
Yeah.
But then it's just been a long week and yeah. If somebody wakes me up on a Saturday morning and I'm not expecting it, I'm not a happy camper. Harry actually deals with this pretty well.
Especially if it's before I have breakfast. Like, don't even talk to me before I have my coffee, guys. Seriously. I mean, he's 12, so I hope he's not having coffee, but...
Well, you know, pumpkin juice, whatever. Yeah. It's all the same.
Same deal.
Yeah, exactly. Before my pumpkin juice in the morning, don't mess with me. So I do love this, though, because I just think it's so funny that Harry rolls out of bed and the morning just keeps continuing to get worse. Because then, of course, for some reason, Colin Creevy's already up and just badgering Harry with questions about Quidditch. And I just kind of love... Yes, said Harry, heavily resigned to explaining the complicated rules of Quidditch. And I just like, this poor kid. He's having a bad, bad week.
I know. This kid sounds like he would get on my nerves in a heartbeat.
And it's really interesting. And I kind of, you know, I love that it throughout this story here so far, you can tell this isn't what Harry wants to do.
Right.
But he's never outright rude to Colin. Colin just seems kind of oblivious to social cues of, hey, kid, I have to go to Quidditch practice. Can we, like, maybe talk later? The vibe that Harry is given is not being picked up. And so he just kindly kind of resigns himself that this is going to be his life.
Yes. And I think we've all met somebody like that or worked with somebody like that before where they just don't pick up on social cues at all. And it's hard to be like, yeah, it's really great. I would love to keep talking to you here, but I need to get back to work. And you can literally turn back to start working and they're still talking to you. And you just, absolutely. Everyone knows that person. And that's who it reminded me of. So I was like nails on a chalkboard reading Colin Creevy. It's like, please make it stop. Ooh. And we just met him.
Yes.
So it's going to be a rough go for me.
You know that sound when somebody like is doing like cutting their meat on a plate and it makes that screech sound that hurts your teeth? It's so bad.
Yeah.
That's exactly the feeling that I got with Colin Creevy as well. So I'm just right there with you. What I like in this is that it continues to show Harry's quality as a person.
Oh, yeah. He has way more patience than I do.
Absolutely. He just doesn't brush this kid off. He's never really rude to him. And I just enjoy the fact that he treats him well when most people would probably just kind of turn and be like, dude, get the message. I don't want to hang out with you.
Yeah.
And so I think... It's a really cool thing, the way in which she continues to show that Harry kind of collects these people that wouldn't necessarily get along with other people or other people just wouldn't put up with, and Harry does. But you never get the feeling like Harry just does it out of obligation. Like, there's something more there. I really appreciate that. So,
yeah, He collects what I like to refer to as like the island of misfit witches and wizards.
Yes.
Like, that's his own little army, the army of the misfits.
Is Colin Creevy the little train that has the square wheel?
Yeah, yes. Yes, he can be the train with the square wheel. But I just feel like there's so much good that comes from that and so much learning that you can do in those circumstances when you have, we joke at work, there's like a whole area we call the area of misfit, you know, casework. And so I just feel like it's always more challenging in a good way. So I feel like we're starting to build our merry band of misfits here. And I mean, Colin drives me crazy, but there's, as we come to learn, he's going to be incredibly integral in this book. So, don't just discount him because he's annoying. You know, there's so much that he can learn from him and he gets from paying attention. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, it's an interesting thing because the day continues to get worse Oliver reminds everybody that, well, you know, we would have won. And then he kind of stops himself from like blaming Harry for stopping Voldemort at the end, for them not winning the Quidditch Cup. But you know, secretly inside, that's exactly how he feels because that's the kind, I mean, that's the boy, that's his age. And you know, when you're that age, it's hard not to feel like the most important thing in the world is your sports team if you're on one, you know?
Yeah, it's hard not to blame Harry because they don't really understand what happened or what he caused or prevented, I guess. So they have been told it's important, but they don't really have any sort of personal context around it, which is really hard to just buy in and be like, I missed out on something that was really important to me because someone else told me this was more important. And it's also, again, something as a kid, I think you can relate. I mean, as an adult, you can relate, but I think especially as a kid being told, no, this other thing is more important is really hard. And it's a hard lesson to learn. And so I think that's also kind of a nod to that like, he's doing the best he can. Oliver Wood's doing the best he can, but it's still not very good. And unfortunately, Harry gets a little hurt by a little hurt feelings, I guess, about what happened. But it's that moment where you're like, it's a little tough. It's a tough lesson to learn. But, you know, I think they're all going through it together.
Pardon me for, you know, saving the world. My bad, guys. I didn't mean to get in the way of, you know, the Quidditch Cup. But yeah, I mean, I saved everybody's life. Whatever.
Yeah, but a lot of them think that.
I know
that there was no Voldemort. You know, they all think he's been gone for, you know, 12 years now, a decade. So they may, and I don't even, we don't even know if they were told that that's where Harry was and what Harry was doing, or they just know he fought something in the basement or the dungeon or wherever the heck they called it. So, you know, it's just the tough thing of not really understanding and getting, you know, the personal attachment to your own thing. It's tough. It can be, even as an adult, I guess, to be tough, but I think it's a particularly tough lesson for kids.
Mm-hmm. No, I think, and I honestly agree with you. I think that's just one of those, it is one of those interesting predicaments because obviously there are all the rumors that went around at the school about what happened last year, but probably nobody knows the full story. And, you know, it's one of those things that'll actually be used later on. In the series, in book 5, actually, about Harry and things. So she kind of plants, this is kind of a strange connection. I didn't really think of this, but that is kind of one of those areas in which it shows that even though we know the full story of Harry and everything, not everybody else in the wizarding world knows that full story like that. So it creates this thing where when it gets to a certain point, people are kind of like, did that really happen? You know, like, are you just like blowing things out of proportion? Is this fake news?
And that's a theme she plays with the whole time. And this is just another way that she's playing with that.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. What I do really, really enjoy, and we talked about how poor Harry has had just a really, really bad day. The joy is, he gets on that broom, and the moment she says, it felt wonderful to be back on the Quidditch pitch as he kicks off with his broom. And, like, you can just kind of feel that joy that Harry probably has at that moment. And then, of course, it's completely ruined when the Slytherins get there.
Yeah, they are just not nice people. They're just not nice kids at all. At all.
It's so frustrating, the way that Malfoy, you know, specifically, but all the Slytherins treat everybody else like that they're second class citizens.
Yeah.
And of course, this is the moment where Hermione says something sharp and smart alecky to Malfoy, as you do. And of course, he shoots back with calling her a mudblood. And what I thought was so interesting about this, and of course, Ron tries to curse him, and it backfires because his wand's all crappy because he sat on it. Not sat on it, but it was messed up in the, the incident with the Whomping Willow. So, but I thought this was really interesting because this is a moment where Ron really shines, and it's kind of taken away in the movie, but in the book, this is Ron's moment, really, not Hermione's moment.
I feel like this is not just Ron's moment. I feel like this is a Weasley moment. Like, yes, this is yes, the Weasley yes. family at their best. Because not only does Ron try to go after him, but they had to hold back Fred and George, too. So, like, all three yeah. of them were, like, on it. And Harry and Hermione have no idea what's happening. They're like, well, I assume it's not good because everyone's freaking out.
Well, and it's kind of, again, it's a place where the movie gives the moment to Hermione, but, and it downplays the importance of Ron, because Ron and then, they end up at Hagrid's, and she kind of has to ask, like, I mean, and Harry asks, we know it's bad, but I mean, what does it really mean? And they explain to her exactly what it does mean and how bad it is. I mean, it is the worst, curse that you can put on somebody in the sense of just using your words without an actual hex or curse or something. I mean, it would like be...
I was trying to think of a comparison that I could bleep out, but I can't come up with one.
No, the only one I can think of, honestly, for a female, is you called her the C word.
That also, though, is locational. So that's different. Like in Europe, that's taken differently than it is in the United States. Which is why I'm not.
I would just say here in America.
Yeah. Yes.
It's
almost more racist. It goes back to those racist
ties
that she's playing with. So it's almost more like calling someone the N-word. Right. Yeah. It's almost more like that, but for their wizarding status versus their skin color. So
think of any racial epitaph that you can think of
that would be insulting.
Just horrible, that it's insulting in any way possible. I mean, think of anything that you could be called that would be super offensive to you that has a racial undertone to it. It's just not good. And I really like the way in which she uses this in the story. Like it's such a subtle way of connecting these parts of the wizarding world together. But I think they have a really big impact as you move forward. You know, like, again, this is kids being kids and just being nasty to each other, because kids do that, right? But the way that she lays this out there, it has a larger emphasis for and a larger impact on what you'll kind of feel and learn about the rest of the wizarding world. Specifically in this book, with what happens later on, the reaction to Hagrid later on in the book, and then just in general with the way that certain wizards are treated over others. And so it's just really well handled, I think.
It's interesting because along the lines of it also, it being racist, it really just speaks to the core of why, like, racism is so terrible. And it's that you're judging this person. So in our case, we're judging Hermione based on the status of her blood, which she has no control over, right? She didn't do anything. She didn't say anything. She just exists and has this attribute, and it's being judged and held against her. And it's making her less than because of something that she has absolutely no control over. So it applies beyond race. It applies to so many other things that happen in our world, which is what makes these things so terrible, is that these people don't have control over who they are and what they become. They can control what they say and what they do. But it, like Hagrid points out, there's not a spell that they've come across or anything that Hermione can't do. So who cares what kind of blood she has? She's an amazing witch, you know? So I love that all the kids kind of jumped in and it became like this big roaring hubbub that happens, and they like run away, like they just leave because there's nothing that's going to fix it. But I think I love even more Hagrid's just response, which I think in the movie we get the real touching moments of it. Like you get that feel that he has for her. But in the book, it's just so moving. That he's so incredibly insightful and kind, even though she's just sort of figuring out what it means and what it is and doesn't quite know to be offended yet. He's there to be like, there is not a thing you can't do. So don't even listen to it. Like, don't even give it another thought. And it just made me swoon.
Yeah. One of the things I think that Hagrid does so well here is the way in which, first, we're talking about the messenger, which is Malfoy. Who cares what Malfoy thinks? And this is one of the things that I don't like about what the movie does, is that it doesn't allow this to be a lesson for Harry and Hermione, because they're not hurt. They don't get it. So they have to be educated about what's bad here. And in the same way in which parents have to educate their children about the things that they don't necessarily understand, that there are certain words, there are certain phrases, there are certain things we don't do to people. And one of them, like you said, is to judge people based on something they have absolutely no control over, like their skin color. That's not something I can do anything about. I was just born that way, you know? And it's, and then two, when we use that to then segregate people or demean people because they happen to have a certain skin color or hear muddy blood. It's just so, she does such a great job of talking about this. And I really love the way that Hagrid specifically is very upfront with them.
Yes.
But then he is also, he's just that loving uncle, because then he's just like, you know, ribbing them about other things, about like, you know, hey, Jenny came by, you know, but she wouldn't mind a signed photo of Harry. Or when he's like, I've heard you've been giving out signed photos. How come I haven't gotten one? And Harry is just like ready to tear him apart. And he's like, I'm only joking. I was just kidding.
He knew he was going to push his buttons. It was so great. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I think
that may be one of my favorite Hagrid moments of all time.
It's because he doesn't get to pull one over on them very often. Like, you know, noticeably through the book, they get smarter and smarter, and they eventually are smarter than Hagrid, you know?
Yeah.
So it's funny that he can still pull one over now on them, catching him off guard and pushing what he knows is probably Harry's button. But yeah, just the last point on that. I love that Hagrid is up front. I totally agree with that. I think that by being able to just address it right head on, as honestly as he can, and then to, you know, this is what it is and why we shouldn't do it, and don't worry a thing about it, and let's move past it. He handled it beautifully, and it's inspiration for how to handle other conversations that are similar for parents and other people
absolutely
out there. Which is,
well, it just made me think of the importance of telling kids the truth. You know, have you seen Wonder Woman yet?
Yes,
Freya?
I did.
In the way in which I thought in that film, you know, Wonder Woman isn't told the truth by her mother about a lot of things, and it's kind of painful for her to come to those realizations herself. Hagrid does the exact opposite. He tells the truth. He explains it thoroughly. And then he moves on in this situation. And I just thought that is such a great way. I mean, that's such a great parenting thing. Like, tell your kids the truth. Let them know what the real story is. Let them know people are going to be jerks in this world. And then you move on. You know, like.
Yeah. It's the opposite of Dumbledore, you know?
Yeah.
That's the two sides of the coin, right? Hagrid will tell them almost anything they want to know. And Dumbledore will tell them only what he feels they need to know. So it's a good balance. I think
exactly.
The two work together well. I think if you didn't have Hagrid, it would be even more frustrating to try to talk to Dumbledore. But yeah, I mean, he'll basically tell them most anything they need to know, which or want to know. So I think that's his role in the whole series. Mm-hmm.
Well, and there's a sense in which, you know, sometimes that's good, sometimes it's bad, you know? And we see that both in Hagrid and in Dumbledore. Sometimes they're right, and sometimes they're not so right in what they tell or don't tell, you know? And I think one of the things that she does very well, and this is something I never even thought of, is the way in which she portrays these adults as loving but flawed human beings that are going to make mistakes. And it's a good way to, I think, talk about that with your kids. If you're a parent, you know, hey, I love you, but I'm nowhere near perfect. So I'm going to do my best for your best, but that doesn't always mean that I'll always be right or make the right decision. And I'll apologize for that ahead of time and when it happens. You know, like, I think that's a really cool lesson that we see in these books that, and it's where the kids learn the people that they can trust, like the Weasley parents or Dumbledore or Hagrid, and, you know, even McGonagall, I think of, especially by the end of the series, so trustworthy for them. And they've earned her respect, too. You know, I mean, it's just, it's such a beautiful thing. So, great series. Last thing I wanted to ask you about that I thought was really funny is we've talked a lot about the idea of celebrity, and we get this whole thing with Hagrid. When they're going to his house, they hide for a minute because who's there but Lockhart telling him how to do what he already does. And Hagrid's like, you know what? If one word of it's true, what he's written, because Hermione's defending him, I'll eat my kettle. And I just...
Well, and I like that Harry points out, like, it was unusual because Hagrid almost never speaks ill of any Hogwarts teacher ever. And this one, he's just like ready to throw him in the fire right away. Like, first week of school, and he's already like, yep, throw you to the wolves.
Well, and it's that place where we learn, too, that the Defense Against the Dark Arts job is not one that a lot of people want anymore because people are starting to think it's jinxed. And it's their first mention that maybe there's something not quite right with that position, and this is why we keep having different people in charge of that. She's so good at just dropping these little things in that are going to be so huge for the rest of the series.
Yeah, I agree. And I think honesty, I think so. You've got a couple of different themes that she plays with a lot, and honesty is definitely one of them. I don't think anyone ever lies straight out to Harry. They just kind of withhold the truth. But yeah, it's definitely honesty playing as a big, big role in the series. So I think it's great. I also, we haven't really talked about it, but it's just to me so hilarious that they have Ron like burping up slugs almost the entire mm-hmm. chapter, and they almost treat it like it's karma back to yeah. him for flying the car, I'm guessing. I don't know, but yeah,
and then they have their detention at the very end of the chapter where Ron is having to do the muggle work of cleaning the trophy room, which he has to keep cleaning the trophies over and over again because he keeps burping up things onto the trophies he's already cleaned, which is hilarious.
And it would totally happen to me.
Yeah. And then, you know, sadly, poor Harry has to address letters with Lockhart, and that's where he starts hearing things, which isn't so good. He also gets wisdom, like... this is just a nugget that you're going to carry around, maybe, you know, put it on a pillow, but celebrity is as celebrity does. Remember that, Harry.
I thought you were more referring to the wisdom that he heard through the wall, where it was, come to me, let me rip you, let me tear you, let me kill you. And I was like, well, that's some dark wisdom there, Matt.
No. I was actually going with the real wisdom here from Lockhart. I mean, that guy knows his stuff. And I kind of like that, you know, Harry, he doesn't really know what to make of this. And he asks Ron about it, and they're trying to figure it out. Like, I mean, nobody, like, came in the room. I mean, even if you're invisible, you still have to open the door. If, you know, they're
rationalizing
thinking about it.
This.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, it is that first inclination that something super creepy is about to happen. I mean, something wicked this way is about to come.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because if this is the same beast that we see in the movie, it doesn't talk in the movie at all. It has no voice. He just hears like random noises. Like it's talking to him, you know, like in a sneak language, but we never hear like what it says.
Right. And I mean, nobody, and that is the really creepy thing, you know, nobody else seems to really hear it. So yeah, super scary.
So if you think about the fact that it's actually like you're hearing words and what it's saying in Harry's head, mm-hmm. like that's what he's hearing, it makes it even creepier. Because in the book, you're like, oh, well, it's just weird snake noises. Like it's weird. Or in the movie, you're like, oh, it's weird noises or whatever. But if he's actually hearing what it's saying and not realizing it's not even speaking English, that like how much creepier does that make this whole thing?
Yes, That's a good thought. And you just ruined part of the book. So,
ugh, I'm sorry. It's okay. I ruined it for everybody.
I'm just teasing you. Yeah, totally ruined. But it's, I'm excited to really continue this book because there's so much here that I'm just enjoying being in this story. And next week we're gonna get into a chapter that's not in the movie at all, the Death Day Party. Which is a very interesting look at all sorts of things. So I'm excited about it.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. Well, Drea, if you know, somebody might want to like talk to you about Harry Potter or anything else, where could they find you? Maybe on the interwebs.
Sure, you can find me on Twitter at PCFchick, or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's CoffMan. And feel free to reach out and give me the feels as much as you want about Harry Potter. It's really easy to give me the feels nowadays. So,
all the feels.
Dude, I cried so much at Wonder Woman. It wasn't even funny.
Aw. That's such a great movie. It was anyway, a great movie. you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing a show here on the network with John Mills talking about Star Wars, and that podcast is called Aggressive Negotiations. Great podcast. I think you're going to enjoy it. If you like Star Wars, I mean, it doesn't really get much better. Also, you could find me on the Trek FM network. I'm talking about Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, that is, with Chris Jones, and that is called The Orb. And I'm also doing the General Geek Show over there called the 602 Club. And we talk about all things geeky, like Wonder Woman or Star Wars or anything that we can try and possibly fit in, we do on that show. So make sure you check it out. And I have a brand new, I know you're like, what? I have a brand new podcast that I hope you'll check out. It's called Cinema Stories.
Ooh.
And it is all about film and faith. And so we talk about films from that perspective. So I hope that you will check that out. And you can find that on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. So thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.